Best-selling author and Pulitzer Prize finalist Annie Jacobson tells us this morning about her investigation into warfare in the age of biometrics and the dangerous implications of new technologies that would allow the government to identify anyone, anywhere, at any time. Few understand biometrics, but the technology implemented in Afghanistan to promote the rule of law has quietly made its way to American soil. As the globe faces COVID-19, biometric data is being used to learn more about the virus. But without an understanding of its dangers, are we unwittingly endangering democracy and moving toward a surveillance state? Annie Jacobson's new book is First Platoon, A Story of Modern War in the Age of Identity Dominance. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Annie Jacobson to the roundtable this morning. Annie, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
What brought you to this particular subject and wanting to raise the concern?
I was working on my last book about CIA paramilitary operators when I first learned about these biometric captures in war theater. And my question was, what are biometrics? You know, the Latin word human measurements. But what it really is specifically are fingerprints, facial images, iris scans, and DNA of individual humans. And I asked myself, what is going on that the government would be capturing biometrics on people overseas? And that led to this swollen reveal of what I learned in telling the story of First Platoon is that it is about the birth and the rise of the Defense Department's quest to be the world's most powerful government. Tag, track, and locate people, not just overseas, but now here in the United States as well. And this is all before they become criminals.
So my understanding is, like many things, there is some good to this. Obviously, there are positives, but we perhaps have not fully gotten into how this can be used against us.
Absolutely. And, you know, we see a small example of this unfolding right in front of our very eyes, with the insurrectionists being identified through facial images, right? So, you know, the first perhaps major reaction is, this is a great thing, you know, catch these guys. And this is being done by, you know, researchers online who are not law enforcement officers, but rather specialists in digital identification. And it's also being done by hacktivists who are now making public the geolocation linked to those photographs. And so it speaks right to the heart of your question, which is, you know, is this a good thing, is this a bad thing? And perhaps more importantly, what are we going to do as a society where we have a situation where civilians can work far faster than the courts, who are deciding about whether or not any of this surveillance bumps up against the right to privacy?
So the story that you tell, obviously there are huge issues and huge implications of what you are writing about, but the story is about young soldiers sent to Afghanistan. There's the tragedy under First Lieutenant Clint Lawrence. So tell us a little bit about that part of the story, which brings you to the larger story of modern war.
And these two stories entwine, and you're right, the first, that's why it's called First Platoon, is about this platoon of very young soldiers. Most of them have just graduated from high school in 2012 when the story begins. And they are deployed to Afghanistan, I think, to fight the Taliban. What they don't realize until they get there that they're on a mission to capture biometrics on all the villagers in an incredibly dangerous area down in southern Afghanistan called Zari District. And they are being shot at, you know, IEDs, they're suffering incredible, tragic losses. And they have to patrol these little tiny villages where there's no running water, no civil services of any kind, and get fingerprints and DNA and iris scans on these local villagers so the Defense Department can create this massive biometric catalog. And it's baffling that they're doing this, and it's like an anachronism, because this is like life down there is, you know, medieval in a way, and here they are using the most technologically advanced human biometric capture systems. And as that story unfolds, we learn about how and why the Defense Department is doing this, how they took a page from the FBI playbook and then kind of went off on their own and created their own database. And ultimately, the story where they meet and merge is in this tragic undoing of the platoon with this rogue army officer named Clint Morantz, who shows up and orders the young soldiers to fire on civilians, killing two of them. And ultimately, the sort of twist within the twist is that while the lieutenant is convicted of murder and sent to Leavenworth, as he should be, he's then gotten out of prison by a team of lawyers who use bogus biometrics to get to receive a pardon from the President of the United States, former President Trump.
So talk about that a little bit, of how biometrics played a role in the pardon of Lieutenant Lawrence. And ultimately, what we find out through your reporting, the White House didn't even know about that evidence.
Well, that's right. And I think, so the real kind of spookiness of all of this to keep in mind is that these massive biometric databases are controlled by a very few number of individuals. And they're understood by far fewer, right? So when I began reporting,
and that's scary.
And yet it is being used. You know, the fate and the future and fate of individuals all across the country lies in those databases, and no one understands what's even in there, where they work, how they work. And I learned about them from the number two at FBI, an assistant director named Tom Bush, who set this whole program up in the early days of the war on terror for the Defense Department to be a joint effort. And the Defense Department said, thanks very much, FBI, we're going to go on our own. And the rub there is that the FBI's databases are legislated by Congress. They are based in law enforcement concerns. And the Defense Department has no such oversight or controls. And so the real heart of the matter is no one even understands biometrics. I mean, we're all busy doing, you know, just surviving at this point and doing our laundry and making dinner. And, like, you want me to stop and think about biometric database? And, you know, well, you should, because the cataloging of people is happening, right?
Now,
so when you,
well, that cataloging, and I apologize for interrupting, but the cataloging of that really shocked me, because I thought it would be on a select few that have been targeted that you want specific information on. But you're talking about a cataloging of 80% of the entire population of Afghanistan.
That is correct. And that, in essence, when you read the book, you realize you have to scratch your head and go, this sounds a lot like a pilot program for the United States, because why was this going on? And as Tom Bush explained to me, he said, Annie, everybody in the FBI's database, by the way, there's 50, 70, up, you know, million people in that database now. He said to me, everyone in the FBI's database, 100% of them had a cross with law enforcement. Mm. They were, you know, they did something to get themselves fingerprinted. But what is happening with the other databases is that there is no such violation of the law. So when you now travel, hopefully again one day, and you think that at Customs and Border Patrol that it's taking your face, an image of your face, it's also taking your iris scan. And no two iris scans are alike. Those are your iris scans that are now forever in that database. Same with all the passport photos. The State Department agreed to give over every single passport photo of every single passport holder in the United States to this database. We haven't even begun to talk about DNA, which now can be taken off of a coffee cup. Your lips leave behind in tiny micrograms of your DNA a genetic fingerprint of you. That is going into a database, or can, rather, without you knowing. And again, why? To later be able to link you to a crime.
So intent, to me, is a huge part of this. So what is the intent in collecting this information? And I'll combine that with the question of not so much, although obviously it's pertinent, but not so much even within the Afghanistan population, but how this technology then makes its way to the United States.
That's right. And, you know, intent really is the issue here, because the reason why the FBI, you know, gets biometrics on criminals is because their intentions are bad, right?
But, right.
That's the presumption. So why are we capturing biometrics on everyone? Well, we are because we are. Somehow, and I write about the origin point of this happening in the story. And in essence, it's like the Frankenstein monster. It just gets out of control. It's like, hey, this is going to be a really great idea. We can catch bomb makers in Iraq and Afghanistan. But then it's things out of control. And then before you know it, you have the Chinese doing it. We have to keep up with the Chinese. And so now we have these systems here back at home. And really, the real rub is what to do with all this data. And you ask why, what is the intention? Well, the intention is rule of law. And I have a piece in Wired magazine from yesterday that talks about how Palantir Technologies is now leading the efforts to be able to process and aggregate vast archives of data that are being captured on people, be it the DNA, be it the iris scans, or be it full motion video now, which is when you see airplanes overhead circling over cities, like in Baltimore, or helicopters circling in a pattern, fixed wing aircraft, rotor aircraft. What they are often doing is taking full motion video of a city below, so that can be stored in a database, so that when a crime gets committed later, that video is rolled back and the perpetrators are located. But the only system that can handle this data is an AI system. It can no longer be handled by humans. And so you see, we have so many conversations that need to take place about all of this, because it's truly spiraling out of control.
So we only have about 2 minutes, so I apologize for really generalizing here, but... So basically, what happens is they spend billions of dollars on this system. It all goes to hell. None of it works. And yet, we keep doing it. We keep using it. We keep working on it as if it were not a complete failure.
And don't worry about the generalizations, because, you know, it has to be boiled down to a concept. And I think sometimes biometrics are made so people will just turn the other way. But here's the rub on what you said there. You're right. It doesn't work in a system like Afghanistan because there is no rule of law. So
yeah. You
can create a big catalog of people, but then what? And I write, how are you going to find the bad guy once you identify who he is? He's gone. He's over the hill to Pakistan. But in the United States, that's not the case. And that's where the frightening difference is that we have 84 million surveillance cameras on the ground in the United States. That's more per capita than China. People don't realize that your license plates are constantly being read by systems set up by law enforcement around a city. And so when a crime gets committed, the ability for law enforcement to move in and locate those people is far faster than you would think, which is great if there's a criminal, but what if it's not?
So in our final minute, let me just ask this question. So we may have many listeners saying, okay, but if this technology right now can be used to find everybody who was involved in the Capitol riot on January 6th, 2021, is that not worth it?
And they should ask that. But read first Platoon, because you will see the real rub. It's called the fruit of the poisonous tree. And that goes back to the Constitution, which is if you get evidence in an unlawful way, it can and should be thrown out. And I fear that a lot of these insurrectionists will go up on trial and their cases will be thrown out because the information was gathered not through law enforcement knocking on doors, but by the public, by hacktivists, violating your rights to privacy.
This is a very scary look at the most shadowy corners of American intelligence, and it's really a frightening read, but a thrilling read. Annie Jacobson, I thank you very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Be well. Again, Annie Jacobson's new book is First Platoon. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.